You know, the path of entrepreneurship is probably one of the, if not the most difficult path of choosing. And you have to open every closet and you have to confront every demon in your life that is going to hold you back from your business opportunity. So very much so, it's a mirror to self. What is my intentional purpose here on earth? Why the hell am I here? And what am I here created to do? In my friendships, I'm highly misunderstood.
Today's episode is the first one in a series of conversations with neurodivergent entrepreneurs. It is estimated that 1 in 7 people are neurodivergent, and we're curious to explore the interplay between neurodiversity and entrepreneurship. Today, we're talking to Nick Cavuoto. Nick is a serial entrepreneur who discovered late in life that he has ADD, attention deficit disorder. We explore what living with ADD means to Nick and how it translates to his entrepreneurial life. He has come to describe it as a superpower, but you need to understand what's happening and you need to understand how people perceive you. The last few years in Nick's life have been a real roller coaster with high highs and low lows. How do you cope with a business losing $1 million overnight? How do you deal with most of your clients walking away during the pandemic? Nick very candidly shares how he hit his lowest point when he was about to lose his wife and family, accepted that he was the problem and that he needed help. This help came in the form of 2 therapists who help him understand his behaviors, how his needs are different, and how his relationship with his environment needs to be rewired. Therapy also helped Nick address a near-death experience he had when he was younger that also affected his journey throughout. Add to this Nick's deep spirituality and faith that he used throughout, and Nick is in a very different place now, a place that allows him to achieve the ultimate goal, simplicity. Please meet Nick.
This is Naked by the Future Farm, where entrepreneurship is stripped to its vulnerable core. Brought to you by Vlady Meškobrestinska and Nektarios Lolios. And remember to subscribe, follow, and rate Naked to help us share it with the world.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm doing amazing. Thank you for having me here. I appreciate it a ton.
No, it's a pleasure having you. It's a treat. And we're always very happy to talk to people around the other side of the Atlantic. We always make a point of locating ourselves. So I'm in London right now, which is my home. But where in the world are you right now?
Denver, Colorado, man. So I'm on the front range of the Rocky Mountains. I call this place home and I feel so blessed to be here. It's awesome.
Beautiful. And your name is Nick Cavuoto, which has an Italian twang to it.
It sure does, man. Half British, half Italian. My grandmother's from Colchester, actually. And so, yeah, we have some heritage in your neck of the woods. And that's where I get the dark hair and the blue eyes. So I'm grateful, man. It definitely won me some cool opportunities as a kid.
I'm super excited because we get to talk to you because you have a really interesting story to tell. But it's not just that. It's the fact that you're so vocal about this. So We like talking to people who have a real desire to share the story. And I when we had our prep call, I just felt that. I felt the energy of, man, it's been a rocky path. And I really want to tell everybody. So if anybody can take something away from it, then we've ticked the box here, so which is great. But maybe you can tell us a little bit about your entrepreneurial journey, because I think it's you've been around the block a few times.
Yeah, man.
So yeah, why don't you introduce yourself in your own words for a bit?
I love it, man. Well, I'm a fifth generation entrepreneur. So today's conversation will not only be of my experiences, but it'll be my grandfather talking to you and my father talking, my great grandfather talking to you and sharing about the wisdom, but also the trials that come with what I believe is the ultimate spiritual ascension. I think entrepreneurship is a beautiful tool in order to truly find oneself, because I know this to be true, and likely you do, and the audience does as well, which is that, you know, the path of entrepreneurship is probably one of the, if not the most difficult path of choosing. And you have to open every closet and you have to confront every demon in your life that is going to hold you back from your business opportunity. So very much so, it's a mirror to self. And there's a lot of opportunity in order to dig deeper into what is it that I want? What legacy do I want to leave? And I think, you know, the questions of the internal and then the external, of course, the philosophical of what am I here to accomplish, really start coming up when you get further down the line. A lot of us at the beginning, we're just trying to solve like the simple things of like, what's my product? What's my offer? And you realize that you get on the journey of what is my intentional purpose here on earth? Why the hell am I here? And what am I here created to do? And so that's been a lot of my story, has been the identification process of those things while having a lot of success. I mean, I've worked with Fortune 500 companies. I've mentored over 500 entrepreneurs, you know, and so I've been around the block. I'm 34. So you can kind of do the math. Like I started in my mid 20s on this journey and find myself today feeling like a bit of an old soul, but yet still at the same time only getting started. So, yeah, man. So I'm pumped to have the conversation, no doubt.
I think it's great that you just straight at the deep end, talking about identity, talking about the quest. I think what fascinated me about your story is that you combine the very traditional path of a business builder with the ups and the downs, and not just once, with high highs and low lows. Mm-hmm. But also with an awareness of some of it is actually physiological rather than psychological, right? When we spoke, you kind of, in a very short conversation, you threw in everything. It's like, oh, I made a lot of money, but I lost a lot of money. And then I realized I had ADD. And then I had my near-death experience. And all these things crammed into a very short story. And maybe we can use this conversation also to unpack a little bit that. And I'll position this in a very specific way. So when we talk about mental health and entrepreneurship, and when we started the Future Farm, we realized that there's very little research about this. And then we found this amazing researcher out of the Bay Area called Michael Freeman. Dr. Michael Freeman was a friend of the movement now. And he is one of the first people to identify that you're more likely to have certain psychological preconditions or you're more likely to experience certain things as an entrepreneur. And then it's like a chicken and egg situation, right? So when you mentioned ADD, I thought, yeah, that's one of the things that Michael talked about, right? Can you talk a little bit about how this manifests itself in your experience? How did you identify that something was going on? And how did you realize that this feeds into the way you do your business?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't until I fell out of college twice when I realized something may not be fully right here. You know, for me, I understood that I had a significant amount of ability and I played sports my whole life. So, you know, looking back, I was an incredible athlete. I was great at communication. I had a lot of intuitive upbringing and strength because my parents were spiritual teachers. So it's like all these things were going for me, but I was a kid who forgot his lunch every day. And like, let's think about that, right? Of like the simple things, the most common, I forgot to take out the trash today. I mean, like, it's just, it's part of how it goes. And there's a superpower, wherever there's a strength or a superpower, there's also the shadow side of that. And there's also the defector side of that, right? And so slowing down enough, and meditation has been an incredible practice for me of focusing my energy and focusing my mind in order to not allow the physiological response to be so elevated that then that excitement turns into anxiety, right? And so there's a lot of maintenance around the precondition, but being neurodiverse, being somebody with ADD, being borderline on spectrum, like the RAIDS test for Asperger's, I scored a 111, you know, and anything over 65 is considered on spectrum. If you're over 130, then you're clinically autistic. And so those things for me, I have always viewed as superpowers. It's my ability to not get bored with things and to choose what I want to accomplish and what I want to do. And the reassigned meaning took me out of, you know, feeling like a kid in school who had to go to a special room to take tests, to understanding that I actually am in the top 3% of people in the world who are highly gifted, highly sensitive, and who just see the world very differently. So when I understood that, almost like the Avengers, you know, you have superhuman ability, I started surrounding myself with more people who were like me. And it didn't mean they had to be neurodiverse or an HSP or have somebody with ADD or ADHD. But I kind of countered that with saying, I want to be around people who are up to something. You know, there's a belief that I hold that you can't do epic things with basic people. Like, you've got to be somebody who is around the right types of people. And when I made that switch, immediately the network of the people I was collaborating with, clients I was working with, they were all in the pocket of like Nick Fury bringing together powerful people. I found myself as one of many. And I think that there was a bit of healing in that process to go like, it's actually a benefit that I'm quite different. And I think that my philosophy is that God was intentionally creating me different by design to do something rather unique in the world. And I have to hold that position and the responsibility of the outcome. And so it's become an anchor for me of truth and also a rocket ship of knowledge to use those things for my benefit.
There's an element of belonging here as well that you just put on the table without addressing it, right? Which I think is something that we are all looking for. And it's interesting how it manifests itself in different flavors with entrepreneurs. But if we go back a little bit to that moment of recognition that whatever you experienced was not a bad thing, when it does feel like a bad thing, how does it affect you? So when you when you were going through the phases before you went, okay, this is a superpower, how did it feel to go through this and go, and I'm different, I don't belong, I'm not surrounded by the people of my tribe?
You know, the origination source, it was agitating because it's like to know one's potential. Let's say I would be a great cricket player, but I only could play with one arm. It's like, I know that I could play better if someone would just unhandcuff my arm from my belt loop and let me use it. You know, so there is this point of like, I had kind of reached, let's call it my conscious potential, going like, but I only feel like I'm operating at 5%. So at those moments, that was, you know, aggravating. But I'm the type of person who has lockjaw. So if I get onto something and I want to solve it, come hell or high water, it's happening. So that for me is something that I developed, I think, a certain amount of grit and perseverance through, and it was frustrating. There were moments of disappointment, and I will tell you later on in life, and now having kids, you know, my daughter is neurodiverse, just like I am. And so holding that, you know, 6-year-old, when I knew that at that time I was different, that I had seen things other people hadn't seen, that I had experienced things that other people hadn't experienced, helping her along her journey has been quite healing for me. But in relationships, and certainly intimate relationships, it becomes highly challenging because there's a certain level of, you know, intuition is what I believe is one of my greatest gifts. Yet on the opposite side, sensation is the opposite of intuition. And I've been working with multiple therapists for the last 6 months and learning so much more about myself. But that's the opposite. So the sensation of like, you know, having interesting conversations or doing things like that, it pulls me into a different zone that is less familiar for me. And so, I mean, to just say it how it is, like if we're not having interesting conversations and with my wife or something, or if we're not planning something extravagant, like if there's not something that's really pulling forward my attention span and my interest, I check out really easily. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I've had to become increasingly aware of. And, you know, take on the onus of responsibility of communicating what my belief or my choice or what my thoughts are. I feel that for me, I met with a Taoist monk. And, you know, a lot of times for those of us who are neurodiverse or who experience different opportunities disguised as challenges as ADHD, we lockjaw stories in our lives that are not true. And we cherry pick stories because it feeds a narrative. And again, just like the mind functions, it's got to go on that perpetual wheel. And so we get fixated on a story, yet we cherry pick the reality of what that story is. And soon enough, our identity shifts into a place potentially we never wanted it to be. So I've slowly reduced the I feel statements in my life. And this has been significantly helpful with my mental health opportunities, superpowers, challenges, however someone wants to label them, has been to say, I think, I believe, I choose. And when I'm using the filters of my beliefs and not my feelings, it aligns my perspective very, very quickly. That's been one of the ultimate hacks for me.
How does this translate into running a business or building a business? So because you had like a couple of, let's call them grand failures, in the sense of losing a lot of money, having to let people go, all the things that come with that. So how does that awareness, or before you had that clarity, just this suspicion that something was up, translate into the choices you have to make as a CEO of a company or as a founder of a company?
Yeah. If you aim high enough, you will fail more intensely, more frequently, and faster. So I think the danger for any entrepreneur, no matter what challenges they face, if your aim is not high enough, then your level of success will not be in proportion to your potential. And that to me is the ultimate tragedy. Like, I want to be on my deathbed exhausted and empty because I gave so much, knowing that I left it all in the field. And so I envision having to meet the version of myself that played all out and having to have a conversation on my final day. And I just hope it's the same person. So for me, there's a tension line there of like, how many times can I fail? How many times can I embrace it? Although I am preconditioned and pre-wired in order to try to avoid failure, because rejection is a root of let's call it the my life's wound. So in the process of examining all of these different truths, I found myself going like, okay, so if I'm failing, if I'm having challenges, if I lose $1 million in 2 days, if I build a business in 5 months that has $1 million run rate, then goes to zero by October, you know, if I look at a partner split that happened where I lost a $3 million business, what's the common denominator? And it's me. My feelings are my own. I create my emotions. I create my reality. So what I started to realize is the glass ceiling that was created was off of my own intent, off of my own fear of rejection. We're talking 45 therapy sessions deep to figure this stuff out. But those were the things that I started to realize. And I think that, you know, part of my story is nearly drowning as a kid. My dad pulled me out, and thank God he did. My grandmother from Essex, she taught me the concept of perseverance and allowed me to have the opportunity to face my greatest fear at 12 and to jump back in a pool. That grit and perseverance has a dark side too, of the perpetual motion of making the same mistakes over and over again, going, why me? When I realized that my story became my identity, which was poor me, I realized that my greatest potential had not even been unlocked. And I knew that. Again, it was just like when I was in the other situation in life going, I got my arm behind my back. It was the same feeling. But until our identity, which is, I think, the bedrock of our story, until that shifted for me, my whole reality was a bit of a twisted, contorted truth. So when I unraveled the story to unravel the identity, then I had a choice to create what I wanted to create. You know, Warren Buffett doesn't have a poor me story. Like, entrepreneurs need to hear that. Like, it's all good to go on social and talk about the different challenges that you have. But at the same time, what people love is the overcomer. Get beat down 99 and get back up, right? So my get back up story is being written right now. And I think that the hardest thing to confront is looking back in time and going like, okay, I've been in entrepreneurship for almost 7 years. My daughter's six and I have 3 other kids. So I got 4 kids. How much time was spent in the revolving reality of an old story? And how much time was, you know, I would say compromised, meaning I made a conscious decision to say yes to work and I made a conscious decision to say yes to home. How many different experiences were challenged because of the old story, which to me increases the tenacity to solve it. But the modality of doing so is like that of growing a flower. You can't yell at a flower and tell it to grow. It's water and sunshine. And the process of growing a business, I think, is more organic than mechanical. You know, a lot of people talk about scale and use this foundational philosophy or read this book or use these systems to scale. And while all of that is rather 3D, if you as the entrepreneur are not okay and you're experiencing hyper failure, you need to slow down. Number one, if you're blaze energy like I am, Wealth Dynamics is a great test for this. to figure out what's your entrepreneurial DNA, what's your style. I'm full out blaze. I'm a star. And guess what? Stars that are alone burn out. So you need to be around other powerful people, recognition driven, typically in their motivations. But you also need someone who's a deal maker, who can help keep the engine of your company running from a sales perspective, and then a lord. And a lord is somebody who is essentially asset protection. So I have learned to have the right people around me. Most people don't enter relationships in business to be takers, but the reality is most people are. It's a hard truth, but at the end of the day, everyone's looking out for themselves. My last business exit, I paid $150,000 in refunds because of things were not on time. And again, we're talking about a scale. I'm paying my team $100,000 a month, like at that point, 20 some odd people. So, you know, we hit a certain spot of where I said enough is enough, and I cut it off and had to pay $150,000 in refunds over 3 months. Guess what? My team was still knocking on my door saying, oh, I ended on this day, which prorated is this amount. And I didn't even pay myself for 4 months. At the end of the day, you know, as somebody who's an entrepreneur with the right intention and heart, you're a giver. And you got to be careful because you have to set your own boundaries because takers don't have any.
You put a lot on the table right now. I was particularly intrigued by when you started talking about the environment, the people you surround yourself with.
Yes.
And it's good to have a categorization for the people you surround yourself professionally. But when things get difficult, what matters is also the people you have in your personal life, in your private life.
Yeah,
we talk a lot when we talk to founders who've been through the ups and downs and experienced a mental health journey of sorts. We talk a lot about giving people permission to call them out, giving people the permission to, like in the last episode that we published, it was a founder in Singapore who his friends staged an intervention and practically forcefully put him on a plane and flew him to Bali, where he wasn't allowed to work. How do you deal in your life with the permission of the people who are not your business colleagues, your business, your co-founders, like your wife, like your family, like the people who are close to you? Do you have a mechanism for that? Is there an environment where people can do that?
You know, part of being an entrepreneur is riding a bit of a lonely trail. You know, I have struggled in peer-based relationships and friendships quite significantly. And to be honest, a lot of it is rooted in the idea that I don't want to go hit a white ball around, you know, a perfect, you know, perfectly landscaped, you know, yard for, you know, 4 hours in a day. I'd rather spend that with my kids. So my kids have become a significant focus for me of where I'm spending my time. And, you know, the idea around the social friendships have taken a bit of a decline in the wheel of life. And I do have one friend, but he lives in New York, so I don't see him as much as I'd love to. But he reminds me of the need for fun. And being somebody who's highly intuitive and less based on sensation, I don't get the same feelings that people do when they go to Disney World. I'm like, this is great. This is cool. But that euphoric state, and additionally with the, you know, I think the challenges in physical health with entrepreneurship around burnout and things like that. And, you know, when you have 16 clients in a week who are complaining, you know, your stress response system is out of the roof. Yet when you close 16 deals in a week, your excitement level is out of the roof. So the emotional pendulum becomes of grand scale. So that anything in a moderate zone is rather numb. At least that's what it's been in my life. And again, that's also attributed to some of my unique challenges. But I think that my father has become a close confidant for me in both business as a previous entrepreneur for 30 years. You know, my wife is, I always say, the chief investor because she's investing the most to see success happen. In my friendships, I'm highly misunderstood. And I'm okay with that, by the way. I struggled with that for a long time. Like, it was more so my wife would be like, why don't you go hang out with the guys in the neighborhood? I mean, I live in a very affluent area in Denver. There's, you know, professional athletes. Everybody's an athlete, a doctor, an entrepreneur in my neighborhood. And even so, when they're and I've gone to work with some of them, like whether it's a shared space or whatever. And when they spend every moment outside of a client call or client experience searching for vacation, I'm the guy who taps them on the shoulder and says, what are you running from? So being a high feeler, being, you know, rather masterful, I study human behavior and psychology for 5 hours a day, every day. I notice things that most people don't notice. And so I also am intuitive enough to know the moment to call someone out lovingly, but most of them don't want to have the conversation because they're hiding. So it's been tough. It's been tough on the additional relationships, the social friendships, mostly because I believe I choose clients to work with and people to collaborate with who I would call friends. And I'm very lucky to be able to do that. But that model for me has worked. And I've stopped fighting that. I don't need to scale anything right now at all. Like I'm in a place of where I'm calming the reptilian mind of like the next sprint, going like, I have enough for today. And it's more profit than I had in a $1 million business that I built in 5 months.
It's really... Sorry, for a moment.
I was just unplugging that Alexa. Something go off again.
You're describing your experience and your journey with very specific terminology, and it's a very reflected kind of way of talking about what you've experienced, what you've been through, how you look at the world. At the same time, I was fascinated when we spoke and you mentioned that you've started therapy not that long ago, but you've been really intensely going at it. What was the moment where you recognized that you'd need that external support to figure out what was going on? Because it's not necessarily a logical step for many people.
Yes. So at home, I had a live event that I hosted at the end of July. Came back, and while sparing the details, essentially was facing divorce. That was basically it. You know, when you're hosting a live event and it's in the space of entrepreneurial coaching, mentoring, and a certain level of personal transformation, because I've been in it since I was 3 years old because of my parents' line of work. And you're sleeping in your car for 2 days during the event, holding that energy in that space for, you know, 30 people. You know, life has an interesting way of teaching us lessons, and the signs and signals will come like a check engine light on a car, and then eventually the engine will explode. And it's very shared as far as equal responsibility. And so I talked to my wife and I said, I need to get help. That's where I'm at. Need help. And I felt like the confusion for me in the last 3 years of 2019, 2020, and 2021, 2019 was a partner split, went into $200,000-$300,000 in debt a couple months after the partner split happened because of some of the business practices that were chosen by my ex-partner. So that sucked. Build an amazing business out of the, you know, ashes of that in a way. And then COVID hit. And then I lost $1 million in 2 days. And then literally 9 months later, I created a new business. And in 5 months, 125 clients, absolutely ripping and roaring. And I had a couple gaps on project management. So I had 3 project managers in the company. 2 dropped really, really hard about 3 weeks away from each other. And that created, you know, they say in startups, you know, if you make a mistake in 1 month, it takes 3 months to repair. I would have needed about $3 million liquid to keep that business running. And I said, I don't want to do it because it was still out of alignment. So on the back of that, I had multiple business failures. I also paid off all my student loans in a month pre-2019. You know, like, I mean, where I was doing over $100,000 a month profit. So I kind of had felt like, I need a W, like I need a win. And I know that I'm the problem. So I knew that I was the problem in my own life. I knew I was a problem in my business. I also knew that I was the solution, and I was the person who held the key to the infinite possibilities of abundance for my family, for myself, for my kids, you know, for the people that I'm called to serve. And it was a bit of wandering in the desert for that time. And I've watched God show up in my life in really powerful ways when I needed. I remember having a prayer that said, God help. Whoever, whatever you are out there, please help. And a week later, I closed a client for $100,000, paid on the spot with a check. Those things are the beautiful parts of entrepreneurship that are not always shared, as in 1 week, you know, I'm facing potentially divorce, going like, I know I need to get help. And I signed up with a therapist who was local. You know, we went through some marriage counseling first, then I went on my own, then she's a PhD. Then I hired another therapist who works with highly gifted, highly sensitive people. And she has unlocked a lot for me. And then I started meeting with a Taoist monk who has spent 45 years as a psychologist and as a Taoist monk. And he allowed me the opportunity to uncover my own story, like a total Jedi guide, to figure out what really the release point was for me. And since that's happened, I've made significant shifts in my world. And I've been meeting with CEOs of some of the biggest companies in the world, being invited into their house. I could have not held that energy before. And I don't, I'm just open hands. I just go, so what's happening in life? How are you? And I mean, these are just the most unique opportunities you could ever imagine. So
first of all, I really appreciate your sharing the more vulnerable side of your story, because I think these are the things where people listen up and go, yeah, that hits home. That's real. But also, if you hadn't heard anything of what you said before, just telling your friend. So I talked to this guy today who went through, I'm about to lose my family, to I'm losing my business, to I'm building a new business, and then I'm losing the new business again, and so on and so forth. At some point you go, how do you recover from that? So you mentioned your faith, which is important, Rico, because for us, and I shared this with you in our prep mm-hmm. call, having grown up in a very religious home myself, but also very restrictive home, I have a very healthy kind of reservation when it comes to faith. But for me, it's really eye-opening to see how many of the entrepreneurs we're talking to find strength in their faith, be it a very kind of established religion or be in their own spirituality. But there seems to be a common thread of people who have this North Star and something that just guides them and keeps them grounded.
Everything changed for me when I realized that spirituality exists to cure struggle. To me, growing up, God was some guy in the sky with a big white beard. Mm. But when you're on your last string of hope, faith isn't faith until it's all you're holding on to. Mm. It's not, for me, smells and bells and chants and mantras. It is a refuge, a bit of a cornerstone, a bit of a foundational place to build upon. Because I don't know, I've never seen someone dropping in one of those YouTube videos of where there's heavy turbulence in a plane going like, you know, mom help or dad help. They're saying, God help. And I think that's part of our humanity. And whatever that translation is of that to someone is totally up to them. But I grew up in a very, you know, rather rigid speaking freedom, but practicing rules and regulations. But I think God didn't really become real to me in the way that I know him now. Until hope was a blink away.
Are you okay if we talk a little bit about your near-death experience?
Of course.
So you kind of just dropped it into the conversation earlier on, right? Mm-hmm. But nearly drowning at a very young age. And then you mentioned that you had to face your fears when you were older. How much do you think now, having gone through your therapy and everything else and looking at your life as a whole, as a business builder, as a family person, as the friend, or how much of this do you think do you go back to and refer to, either to draw strength or just to give you a sense of perspective?
Physiologically, likely more often than I would like to admit. Mentally, visually, conceptually, I did a lot of exercises around that, working with the gal who's the highly gifted therapist. And with her, she had me recount some of the experiences. And one of the things that I think was really interesting for me was, a lot of times I left out the part of the story where my dad jumped in and pulled me out of the water. That's part of the cherry picking, right? And so now for me, there's a sense of gratitude, and I include that in the story now because, you know, as a parent myself, I understand how you look away for 2 seconds and you look back, right? And it's not poor me. It's my dad's a freaking badass, and I'm grateful that he caught the moment. I think in the part of redemption, you know, with my grandmother pulling up her wicker chair and in a pool in the middle of upstate New York, going like, you're going to get in this pool and you're going to swim. And she sat down and started knitting. She used to knit hats and gloves for underprivileged kids. And I found out later in life that was her coping mechanism for her anxiety, but it's all another story for a different day. I relive the moment of getting back in the water, which has been probably the crucible for me. There's been that's the point that I revisit more, is when I slow down the movie in my head of that experience. It's like, okay, I walk to the edge of the water and my feet are going over the side of the pool, and I look down and it's like that no diving sign, right? And it says like, however many feet, 5 feet, you know, whatever, however much the water is. And then you look to the left and you're like, okay, how deep is it over there? You look to the right, how deep is it over there? And I look up at my gram and she's sitting there knitting, not looking, but I know she's there. And then there's this moment of like a decision. I can stand here all day because she's not going anywhere. So I can stand here all day long, or I can just jump. And I think I started realizing the rationalization of the analysis in danger. And it became two things to me. One, how deep is the water? And two, who's here with me? I don't prefer to do the journey alone. And I have overlooked the confidants and the comrades and the, you know, contributors in my world who have sat in that chair. And in every season, it's been different. That's why I said, you know, people who are, you know, seemingly the enemy of my enemy is my friend, you know, a comrade, because I've had those too. And you got to know who's who. My grandmother taught me the most valuable lesson in my life, which was to never give up and to push through discomfort and to face your fears. And now I recognize that there's other people who sit in that chair, but I still have the daily experience of standing at the water. But when you face that deep of a fear at such a young age, the intensity of the entrepreneurial journey of getting sucker punched by Mike Tyson and getting back up again, it's just part of the game.
It's when you were describing it, it was such a recognizable metaphor for what all of us are going through, especially the ones who are doing this for the first time. So we feel very protective, particularly of first-time founders, because we want people to take the risk, because that's what makes a difference. But at the same time, we also want them to understand that it's also okay to not, because that in itself causes all sorts of problems if the conviction isn't there and the courage isn't there. But I think I would like to take this also to segue a little bit into a slightly different angle, and you may or may not want to talk about this. I have a particular frustration myself with investors, with VCs, who are recognizing that somebody is on the spectrum and somebody has these superpowers, but they ultimately create a volatility in the dynamic. And they exploit them in the sense of, I don't care if that person is going to burn out, because when they operate on the highs, the business really grows. Did you experience any of that? Did you experience an environment that practically, I wouldn't say manipulates you to that extent, but very clearly kind of capitalizes on things that may not necessarily have been healthy for you?
I mean, in short, I'm sure that's happened. When I was in vocational ministry, when I was 20 years old until I was 27, 19 to 26, somewhere around there. I was given a lot of permission very early. My work ethic has always been very strong. My attention to detail is holistic versus deep. So I can connect the dots in the stratosphere very, very quickly, but I don't want to actually double click and go into a planet. It's just like I'm that universal thinker, and I can connect the dots and predict things really, really well. And so there was a certain level, I think, of my passion that was exploited because I solved a lot of problems for the founder that for him, I think, he was trying to kind of dip out of. And it's hard because it was also an equal exchange. I wanted permission. I wanted growth. I wanted to be in the game. So he put me in, which was great. But the moment that I knew I had a next step coming and I told him, yeah, the sword of the old guard was interesting, because when I did know there was a moment for me to make a shift and a change, rejection came. So acceptance through performance has been something that I've experienced my whole life. That's a part of the root for me, has been identifying the part of my story that, I have moved past, but it's something to be understanding of. Was that I got the most amount of attention as a kid when I had a problem. So my parents were entrepreneurial, they were in spiritual leadership, they ran all these businesses, they did a lot of things. So for me, being the youngest, they called me Nicky and not Nick, right? Like everything around my identity was really structured around the baby. So I got permission that others didn't get permission on. I also got attention when the others didn't get attention, but I knew how to create that. So I was so good at it that I convinced a 34-year-old man that was my reality, right? So the through line of that and where it showed up is the fracture points of life that like 8, 16, 24-ish, 25-ish, they kind of popped throughout life in these unique ways that were always performance-based acceptance, being a great athlete, being able to get girls. All that kind of stuff was reinforced externally with a void of the internal of I just want to be, focused on, right? So, there were moments of that. I think in entrepreneurship, my perspective or my point of view, my worldview is, you celebrate the wins with the people that help you get there. Sometimes you're buried 6 feet deep alive in a coffin by yourself. But like, I just feel like that's been the journey for me. I choose the path of how I associate my emotions and my feelings, my successes and or my failures with my own perspective. No one forces me to do anything, who to hire, who to fire, what product to build, what not, what clients work with or not. That's on me. But the moment that you realize the deeper thing is the energy you're coming from will either attract the right type of opportunities that are in your future state, be it in your ascension state, or you are bonding with people on a common wound that will keep you beneath the line. That's the glass ceiling. And I've decided to let all of my clients go besides three of them, and they're all paying between double and triple they were paying before. 125 clients to three. Gonna make you more money, more alignment.
That would be a great headline for the episode. There you go. So when we talk, one of the common things in all the episodes we've recorded so far with people who've been through the roller coaster is at some point there was this recognition that checking yourself is important. Building a routine, building that muscle to build up the self-awareness so you can see the signals, you have tools, you know what to do, you know where to look. Where on this path do you think you are right now after everything you've experienced, especially in the last 6 to 9 months?
I mean, I feel like I'm on the kind of final loop. It's probably the last 10%-ish. This may be the experience too that is a somewhat Groundhog Day. You wake up every day in the last stretch of the mile. Mm. And then you go to bed and you wake up every day at the last stretch of the mile. And you just want to get over the finish line by the time that your day ends. I have the people, I have the tools, I have the resources, and I've unearthed the story. And I think for most people, that's the hardest part, is I think there's certain parts of the mental health industry that are really good at diagnosing and are really good at reinforcing where there's the challenge, but in absence of the root. And that's more so, of course, in Western society. And so I've taken up a lot of the concepts of Taoism and the Tao, and focusing on, you know, the river of life, be it the Wu Wei, right? Effortless action, be it. As somebody with a lot of, and when I say 3D, I mean very like earthly, non-spiritual, as earthly as it gets in a non-spiritual sense. With somebody with a lot of 3D grit, because I can get punched over and over and over again, and I know I keep getting up, the challenge becomes when to stop. Mm-hmm. You know, think of a fight. If you ever, you know, maybe in high school or, you know, in college, you know, you see somebody who's getting like wrecked and they just keep getting back. You're like, dude, if you don't stop, like, you're going to get killed. Like, you're done. You lost the fight. It is what it is. Move on. I don't really have that barometer, and I'm learning how to find it. In fact, I'm learning how to not even get into the situation in the first place. So I just want to be in the river. I want to be in the flow of the process. There's crocodiles in the water. There's, you know, edgy stones in the water, but it also is the thing that is the source of life and so much goodness. And so that's been a part of my word of the year was simplicity. Complexity is my enemy, and I have figured that out. And when you identify the enemy, that's also part of understanding how you can defeat it. Mm-hmm. So I made a decision the early part of the year to go like, I'm going to work with three people. I'm going to make this much. And I'm going to be totally okay with that. And I'm going to focus on reducing the throttle for the sake of efficiency. But I've taken my first social media break for the first time in 12 years. Think of that, the rat race of 12 to 14 hours a day on social, going like, I'm working like 3 hours a day and I have no distractions.
I can relate to that. I definitely can relate to that. I walked away from a business that I have built. And for the first 6 months, I didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And it was so hard to fill the void that was filled with all sorts of distractions before. And suddenly you had to look at yourself in the mirror and go, okay, this is me and you and nothing else. So what do we do? So I totally hear you. And but it's also beautiful for you to land on simplicity, because we sort of followed your journey and we're sort of coming to where you are right now, right? And for you to say that it's about editing out the noise and focusing on the simple, the bird song around you in a way, it's wonderful. I really, really That's appreciate right. our conversation, Nick. It's been really wonderful to hear you be so open. We really value that. It's really wonderful to know that when you go through this, you can find help, you can find insights, you can find an element of peace. And you have a very unique way of describing that, because it's packed with metaphors and it's packed with insights, and giving us the opportunity to unpack some of this together was fantastic. And I'm really grateful. So thank you very much for your story.
You're so welcome, man. Thank you for holding the space for it.
You've been listening to Naked by the Future Farm, where entrepreneurship is stripped to its vulnerable core. To learn more about our work, sign up to our newsletter or visit thefuturefarm.co, where you can also apply to be a Naked guest. And remember, subscribe, follow, and rate Naked to help share it with the world.